Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. A poet says that Allah Ta'ala not wished to bless you, he would have not taught you how to plead to him. He would have not instructed you to ask of him. He would have not commanded you to make dua. When he's commanded you to make dua and to plead to him and ask of his favors, he's saying you that he wants to bless you. He wants to grace you. But are you appreciative? Do you also long for him? His treasures are never depleted, they're never short. But do you show him that you really need him? Furthermore, Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullahi says, one of the greatest sins that have been committed is when man shows a don't care attitude, disregard, don't care attitude. That means the greatest act of ibadat is to show that we care. Everything that relates to Allah Ta'ala, to his deen, we don't at any time assume a state of a person who is not cared, not bothered, not concerned. So at any given time we are concerned, we are focused. That focus then will translate to the best type of service. Focus towards him, we're concerned about him, we understand him, we want him, we need him, and we show it to him that we need him. They say that some three people were out on a journey. One of Rum Rahmatullah's stories are more illustrations. So through the illustrations he passed on great sabaks and great lessons. They had to stop over a certain station. And they realized that they've got a big, huge treasure with them. So they've got a big, huge treasure with them. And it is a winter's night, long winter's night, night starting off at about 7 o'clock till 7 o'clock in the morning, 12 hours. Now we've got this big, huge treasure and we need to rest. But we need the treasure to be safe as well. Both have to go hand in glove. We need to rest and we need to see and ensure that the treasure is secure. So how do we get the boat going? The right way is to consult. The Quran Sharif also speaks about consultation in two places, in fact more than two places. Ya ayyuhal mala'u aftuni fi ru'yaya in kuntum lirru'ya ta'burun. The king has seen some dream, so he's consulting his council. This is the dream that I've seen. Explain that to me. There must be some message here. Right. So to consult. And then to consult not everybody and anybody, but the right type of people. The king has thousands and millions of subjects, but who's he consulting? He's consulting the council. Those people that are competent. And the council also needs to feel that they are responsible and answerable. They mustn't just give things off their thumbs. They must know what they are talking about. So they say, no, we don't know. We don't know. قَالُوا أَدْغَاثُ الْأَحْلَامُ وَمَا نَحْنُ بِتَأْوِيلِ الْأَحْلَامِ بِعَالِمِ. We don't know about this thing here. So that's an answer of a person who assumes responsibility. I don't know about it, I don't know about it. I'm not speculating, I'm not taking a chance. Right. You see, there's so much of things to be learnt here in this one verse. There is a situation that you've been confronted with, then speak to the people that are competent. In that regards, in that respect, the one that is competent, then you speak to him. It's an eye problem, you don't speak to a dentist, right? It's a dental problem, you don't talk to a heart specialist. Whoever is competent in that regard, in that field, then you speak to him, you consult him. Number two is you don't take a decision without consulting. When you are taking a decision in some type of an important matter, then you don't take a decision without consulting. If there is a senior that is around, then you consult with your senior. And if the senior is not around, then at least your contemporary. And if the contemporary is also not around, then those that are lower than you. But don't take an independent decision. It's more or less the teaching of the Mawathanvi Sahib Rahmatullahi Alayh. At first it's your senior, and if your senior is not around, then your contemporary. If that person is not around, then your junior. But taking an independent decision, this is very, very dangerous. Extremely dangerous. After a period of time, you begin to have an attitude. No, nobody thinks like me, nobody can reason like me, nobody is like me. Why do I need to subject myself to someone else? So that is a beginning point for the shaitan to take over. He takes over you at that point. You say, no, there's no, this person here, he doesn't subject himself to any type of a mashwara. So it's easy to move on, to take advantage of him, to exploit the person. Then we find Sulaiman alayhi salam and Bilqis, ma kuntu qati'atan amran hatta tashhadun. And there is the fear that Sulaiman alayhi salam is going to come with his forces and armies. What she says, ma kuntu qati'atan amran hatta tashhadun. I only take a decision in your presence. She's again talking to a council. It's a queen. So she's talking to a council that in your presence I take a decision. I don't take a decision without you people present. But without you giving in your suggestions, I don't take a decision. Though both these people were not Muslims at the time that they were consulting, but Allah Ta'ala speaks about them, shows that He's applauding what they have done. He's recognizing what they have done. And though both, according to some reports, both had accepted Islam later on, but Allah Ta'ala is applauding, He's upholding what they had done. See, this is the way. This is the tartib, this is the sequence. Nowadays they say protocol, this is the protocol. ما كنت قاطعة أمرا حتى تشهدون. Hence, whenever there is some type of an important matter, then we subject ourselves to some type of mashwara, some type of consultation. And then the person that is being consulted, he must see what is better for that person. Not better for him, what is the thing that is in the interest of that person that is consulting with me. What is in his interest? I must show him that. I mustn't look at my convenience, I mustn't look at my interest, look at his convenience. And then the person that you are consulting with, not only that he must be competent, he must be an honest person. At the time that you're consulting him, he must be relaxed. Are you consulting him? He wants to go toilet. Are you consulting him? He's already urging, and say, no, mom, it's just one thing I need to know. Now, three-quarter of his mind is in the toilet, quarter is with you. How do you expect him to give you a right suggestion? Or he's extremely hungry and you ask him, no, more, just this one here. Let him be relaxed. When he's relaxed, then he'll be in a better position to answer you. So he must be relaxed. He must be competent, that he is firm in his resolve, in his ways, in his thinking, he's very balanced. That is why they say that you don't consult a woman, nor do you consult a person who spends a lot of time with his woman, though in a jais way, but he spends a lot of time with woman. Either he consults woman, that is not right, or he spends too much of time with woman. Because if you're going to spend too much of time with woman, then he's going to be weak-minded. They don't have resolve. They don't have determination, they don't have courage to do things. So you're sitting with them, then don't their effects begin to rub onto you? The effects then begin to rub onto you. As Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah says, one so-called spoiled person, wealthy spoiled person, just married and he's on a honeymoon. Lucknow people, they're known for them being very, very spoiled. and number two, very, very refined in their ways. Extremely refined in their language, in their ways, very, very extremely refined. So they out and they come up to one hotel like they will do if they are in a honeymoon. They're sitting in the park there and enjoying this whole scenery or whatever. So the wife spots one cobra snake, dangerous, 3 meters long. So she's telling the husband, "Bhai, saamp hai, saamp hai. There's a snake there." So he says, "Koi mard ko bulao. Call a man, call a man, call a man." So she reminds him, "Ke, lekin tum bhi to mard ho. You also a man." So he says, "Achhe waqt par yaad dilaya. Told me on time." He forgot for some time that he was a man. Because of his frequency, his affinity, his association with women, then you begin to lose your manhood. A man is supposed to be having courage, determination, doing things himself, administering. This is man. But if he can't do all these type of things, then he's lost his manhood. Something is missing in him. That mashwara is called mashwara. Why is it called mashwara? Because in the mashwara, each person is called to give his rai. So you see either with your eye or you see with your mind, right? One of the two. Either with your eye or with your mind. What you see with your eye, you say it ru'yat. Don't say ru'yat. And what you see with your mind or with your heart, you call it a rai. One is called a ru'yat and one is called a rai. So this is also the vision, but a vision of the eye. And one is the vision of the mind. The eye has got a vision and the mind has also got a vision. Right? The person knows, alright, I will use this medication and this will be the consequence after so many days. He knows more or less. He's got a vision, he's got a sight. You will take this path here, and in a few months, this is where it will lead you to, right? You go like this, inshallah, you'll get this type of progress. So he doesn't see it with his physical eyes, but with the eyes of the mind, he can see it, okay, this is what is going to be the consequence, so this is called rai. It's also a sight, but it's a sight of the mind. This is called rai. So in a consultation, in a mashwara, people are called up to give their eyes. Right. So as you're consulting with people, provided they are competent, in respect to their competence, each one is giving some light. You've got some complication, then you say, throw some light. So if you are taking mashwara from people that are competent, then that's not only your light, this other second person, third person, fourth person, he's also throwing some light. So it's lit from all angles. You're not looking at the equation from one single perspective, from a single dimension, from one dimension, second dimension, third dimension, fourth dimension. Now you've got a comprehensive plan. You've got a comprehensive idea. The idea is comprehensive. It's tight now. You've seen it from all angles. So inshallah, it should work out. So nonetheless, these people are traveling. And I say again, that the downfall of the Muslims is because of this don't care attitude, not disconcern, not worry, just carrying on aimlessly. Where there is a concern, there is a worry, there is a fikr, inshallah, you speak the right things, you behave the right way, you've got a plan, short-term plan, you've got a long-term plan, and you're moving on. But you don't think, you're not concerned, you create a problem for yourself, you create a problem for others as well. Al-Mu'tami Thami Sabrahman says, one person falls, always messing it up. He's always messing it up. So more are doing, but by think before you do something. He went to a different level. He's traveling by train with his family. Nice, hot summer's day, and he sees someone selling some chana with lemon and all the spices on a hot day, some drinks, whatever. It was a longer station that they had to stop over for 10 minutes or 5 minutes. So he got over. He comes onto the platform. and he's negotiating the price, etc. And meanwhile, that thing whistled and he's moved on. So he's still thinking, as he's whistling and it's signaling that it's moving on, as the train is signaling that it's moving on, he's thinking, oh, Murad told me I must think what I'm doing. So my thinking, is it right? Did I make the right intention? That thing whistled for a second time, third time, it's gone. Ab bichare, now his thinking only came right after the train went on. His wife is there, his children are there, now he's pareshan on one side, they are pareshan on the other side. Now for the right thing for him to do at that time was to move on to the train and then think, alright, now you know what told me to think before I do anything. They think about this. See, sometimes this is also a problem that kisi ke paas ghar ki akal nahi hai. You know, the simple mind, you don't have it. What do you call it? Common sense, you don't have it. Common sense, you don't have that. Common sense would tell you, by board the train. When you have boarded the train, now you can think, now Mara told me, you must think before I do anything. I just bought this thing, did I have the right intention? Did I do the right thing? Did I spend within my means or did I go beyond my means? I didn't think anything and he just went and bought the stuff. So Hazrat is very, very, very strongly opposing this. And he says, see this hukumat that we had 800 years and we lost it overnight. Why we lost it? We lost it because we went into the lapse of luxury and we became negligent. We lost the type of concern, the type of fikr. We lost that concern and fikr. Now we're just going aimlessly, moving around just for comfort, just for enjoyment, no goal. So what we had worked for and what we had earned and what we had enjoyed for 800 years, we lost overnight. So this concern, this fikr, from one generation to the next generation. I speak about it regularly nowadays. But as you've hit now 30, 35, then you can't say I'm a teenager, carrying on cycling, say, then what? Looking after only your body now, then what? I don't say don't look after that body. Now that's taken to another extreme. But you're making the body as though it's the God and it's the goal. Everything you are working for is just the body itself. It's the maintaining of the body. The greater thing now, as you reach 35, 40, then is for you to be concerned about the coming generation. Your parents and grandparents, as a result of their concern, you are where you are. They taught you Quran Sharif, basics, elementary things. Perhaps they couldn't teach you the advanced things. But they brought you to some level. Now, your duty is to pass on those lessons and those values to the next generation. At that time, I think of cycling and body shaping, gymming, whatever else. You'll have a good shape, you'll have a good body. But then what? Then you've just become the fodder of the worms of the grave. Be it a man, be it a woman. But you become the fodder of the worms of the grave. The right thing at that time now is to take control. To think to yourself, see, I have given these children the physical. I've given them the physical material I've given them. Now, what amount of the spiritual have I passed on to them? Deen, religion, consciousness, awareness. This is called values. So what amount of values have I passed on to them? Have I passed on real values on to them? You know, to understand values and value of deen, I was giving an analogy this morning. Right? You become valuable with values. You strip yourself of that value, then you are not valuable. You are invaluable. So you become valuable when you attach those values. And when you strip yourself from that values, then you're not valuable. The value is lost. Now there's no value in you. You strip the honey of the sweetness. Is it valued? Not valued. The rose of its beauty and fragrance. Now is there any value to it? No value to it. It's just got two things. One is the beauty and one is the fragrance. And remove that beauty and the fragrance of the rose. Now is there any value left? No value left. So you understand that this values is a very intrinsic thing. Right inside, it goes right inside. Now for us to understand value in iman, in deen, then let's take an analogy of a marital life, a marital home. Right? Now there are four compartments or say four elements. If you got those four elements, then that home is running well. By the same token, if you've got the same four elements, that iman is going well. The first of which is loyalty and faithfulness. Now, after the marriage, then the first thing that each spouse wants to see in the other is that person faithful to the marriage? Is he loyal? And what that loyalty means, that now that he's in the marriage, or she's in the marriage, she has made me the major concern. She is not worried about the friends, she's not worried about the families. Now her major concern is now, from this point onwards, her major concern is me. She thinks of me. So now, I have proved her loyalty at this point, that I am her major concern. Every other value, every other thought has become secondary in her life. I've become the first person in her life. See? So that is the first thing that the husband is looking towards, is loyalty and faithfulness. That wife shows that loyalty, she shows that faithfulness. Now he is very happy, very extremely. My wife. So this comes when she is showing loyalty, she is showing faithfulness. Every other attachment, every other relationship now is pushed aside just for this man here that has come in. So he is on my head, or I keep him on my head, and then I am, my first commitment, my first responsibility is him. He is right, he is relaxed, then everything will be relaxed. See? So this is the first thing that the husband will look towards. The second thing that he will look towards is commitment. Is this woman also committed to the nikah? She's got a consistent plan, she's committed. She knows that now she's married. When she's married, then she needs to be committed to this nikah. Now she can't be running her free life, running around here, there, driving a car, going to the gym, whatever else. But she can't have all that freedom. Is she committed to this nikah as well? Or she still considers herself to be free like she was before marriage? She says, no, I am a married person, so I am committed to this marriage. So she's not only loyal, but she's also committed. That this is my husband's likes, and these are his dislikes. These are the areas that I mustn't interfere with. These are the areas that he likes and he admires. So I am committing myself to his likes and his dislikes. I am committing myself. She has understood the person, and she's then worked out a commitment plan for herself. So that is the second thing, right? Then the third thing in a marriage life, for the marital life to be happy, to be prosperous, to be moving on, is happiness. That I'm happy for this man here. Yeah? I'm not regretful, this ullu kapatta, he came into my nikah. I got landed with this person here. Yeah? So the third aspect is happiness, pleasure. I'm pleased with the person. And see how beautiful it's coming out. رَضِيْتُ بِاللَّهِ رَبَّا وَبِالْإِسْلَامِ دِينَا وَبِسَيِّدِنَا مُحَمَّدٍ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ رَسُولًا وَنَبِيًّا. I'm pleased with it. I have no remorse about my iman. نَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ اللَّهُ تَعَالَى فُبِدْ. I've got no remorse that I have to go and perform my namazes, my zakat, my roza, my hajj. I've got no remorse about it. I'm so happy about it, so pleased about it. Allah, it's a blessing. How can I ever show gratitude to you, Allah Ta'ala? I don't have the words. So this is the third thing in a happy marriage, that she must be pleased about it. And she must be pleasing the husband. She's not only pleased with the marriage, not only pleased with the selection and the choice, but she's pleasing. She's pleased and she's pleasing. She's pleased as well as she's pleasing. Raditu billahi rabba. And the fourth thing that she has to learn for a prosperous marriage, some mullah must be just writing some points there, so I know next nikah program for the points already. No, it's all right, I can continue. Just thinking, some thoughts are coming, maybe straight thoughts in my mind. Nonetheless, more important is to take it to heart. It's all right, you can write it down. I don't say, don't take it down. Right? But the more important thing is to take it to heart. And the fourth most important thing in having a happy marital life is patience. In anything that relates to this world, there must be the highs and the lows. There must be the fluctuations. There can't be a single straight plan in this world yet. One day you're high, one day you're low, one day it's for you, one day it's for your opposition. Al-harbu sijalun. One day it's your turn, one it's your opposition's turn. So it's going to continue like this. This way, that way is going to happen. But are you consistent with the plan of Allah Ta'ala, the system of Allah Ta'ala? And do you understand that the controller, the one that is regulating the whole system is Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala? So you got that in mind, then you are happy. It's from Allah Ta'ala, then I need to take it in the stride. I'll feel difficult for that moment, but that bitter medicine perhaps is a better thing for me. I don't know what's the better thing. I don't know what's good and what's not good. But he's planned it, inshallah, there will be some good in it. And he'll reward me at the end for it. So I don't need to feel disgusted. I don't need to feel worried or frustrated, etc. Why had this thing had to come to me at this time? So you see these four plans, these four points. And the same four points will hold true in iman as well. You apply the same four points in iman, that iman goes well. You are loyal to your iman, every other relationship is now subject to iman. Iman is the primary thing. I have given myself, my life, my happiness, my time, I have given to iman. Right? That's loyalty, faithfulness to iman. Everything. So it comes out in the verse of the Quran. In kana abaukum wa abnaukum wa azwajukum wa ashiratukum. And it ends up, ahabba ilaykum min Allahi wa rasooli. So the loyalty is to these things, to Allah Ta'ala. And thereafter all everything else comes after that. Whether it's father, whether it's wife, children, everybody else, then they are secondary. But Allah wa Rasul wa jihadin fi sabili, three things. Allah, His Rasul, and striving for deen. These are the primary things. Everything else is secondary. See, loyalty, where loyalty comes, where your loyalty lies, where your faithfulness lies. So it holds good for iman as well. Then that iman is not just a thing of the heart, just thing of muhabbat, but then you committed to that iman. What is the muqtaza? What is the requisite of the iman? And you are doing it. Iman requires of me to lower my gaze now. I will lower my gaze now. Iman requires of me now to show a good face, presence of my wife, my children, my parents. I must show a good face. I will do it, no matter how hard it is. But I will show a good face. Islam commands me to do it. I will do it. I'm enslaved to Islam and not enslaved to myself. I'm enslaved to the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala, not to my pleasure. By isko zara zehn mein rakhne ki koshish karo. I'm enslaved to the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala, not to my pleasure. So in my namaz, in my zikr, in my tilawat, I get a pleasure or not, that's secondary, I will appreciate it. But I've subjected my pleasure to the pleasure of Allah Ta'ala. So is Allah Ta'ala pleased with this? Inshallah, Allah Ta'ala will be pleased because He's asked me to do it. Whether I enjoy or I don't enjoy, but isn't He pleased? Like your friend asked you to come to a da'wat, you may be in a constraint, a difficulty, you went there. Why you went there? You subjected His pleasure to your pleasure. So is He pleased or not? By your attendance, He's pleased. So you worry about His pleasure. Worry about the pleasure of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. Don't worry about your pleasure. Worry about His comfort, don't worry about your comfort. So that's the third requisite of iman. And the fourth requisite of iman is then be patient, tolerant, withstand, enduring. Things will happen for you, against you. You want something, you're aspiring for something, you expected something, you're anticipating something. Something to happen the way that you had planned, the way that you had designed and programmed. But it didn't work, everything failed against you. So you go with that plan of Allah Ta'ala, that this is what Allah Ta'ala planned, and it happened like He planned, finished. Four requisites of iman, the same four things, you can apply it to your marital prosperity, and you can also apply it to the prosperity of iman. So we're talking about these three people traveling, and they've got this khazana, they've got this treasure, and they have to pass this long night, winter's night, so approximately 12 hours. What do they do? So they have mashwara. These are all illustrations of Mawlana Rum Rahmatullah Alayh. The illustrations of Mawlana Rum Rahmatullah Alayh, the ulama are unanimous that you must learn the masail of suluk, then read the kitab. You won't understand it. Or you will understand, you won't know how to apply it. So the suluk will have some masail, and you have to understand those masail, in other words the parameters, from which point to which point. What is the width, what is the breadth. Right? Now you don't know the parameters and you're moving with it, then you can cause destruction for yourself. Hazrat Imam Rasulullah Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says that one peer came in from Punjab. So it was namaz time. One said, I'm going for namaz. He sat there in the Khanqah and performed his namaz there. One asked him, what happened? This peer had thousands of followers, not 50 and 20, 100 followers, thousands of followers. So he explained to Maulana that around that time I had a lot of tawajjuh towards Allah Ta'ala and I had a lot of focus. You know, you say yaksui. And my yaksui was at a very, very strong point. And I feared that if I move away, jamaat, namaz, etc., and come back, I will lose that level of concentration. That level of focus, that level of concentration, I will lose. So Hazrat Imam Rasulullah explained to him, see, this concentration is a secondary thing. The primary thing is performing your namaz with jamaat. But now because you didn't learn deen like how you're supposed to be learning deen, you mixed things up. You began to consider your concentration as the primary thing. The primary thing is to do it how Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam taught you. He taught you to perform your namaz with jamaat. All these feelings, etc., these are secondary things. Feelings will be fluctuating all the time. And for your information, you don't do anything for feelings, zikr, nagot, or very lot of feelings. Sometimes they say, no feelings now. After 1-2 years now, no feelings. The Buzugada didn't say, Purani Bahu to Amma Barabar. The wife, after 1-2 years then, she's become like Amma now. You don't have that excitement. First, there was excitement. Novelty, and let's adventure, there, top valleys and lakes and mountains, everything. After 3-4 years then, there you are, your old chacha now, so the chachi there. So forget all that adventure now. That adventure is gone now, finished, kalas. The chacha is also wrong. If he's very, he's anticipating adventure, then he's wrong as well. Really, I'm serious about this. So it sounds like a joke, but I'm serious about this, really. It's a concern. It's a real concern. You see, the older days, what used to happen, as the girl ages 35, 40, and the husband also resolves, and the wife also resolves, now we're 35, 40, we can't carry on like 20, 25. 2025, we just got married now, we need a little bit of novelty and all that. Alright, finish, that's worn out. Now we are settling in our lives, we need to think about the prosperity and the future of these children coming up. We don't want them to end up, na'uzubillah, in Nasara homes or Nasara fashions and ways, because the Nasara homes, the stepping stone to that Nasara home is the Nasara fashion. Today they are in the fashion, tomorrow they are inside the home. So what have we done? What security plan, what investment plan have we done for their deeni security? Yes, what an investment plan for their material prosperity, but for their deeni prosperity, what security plan have we got? Have we worked out a plan? Are we really concerned about it? To what level are we showing a concern? Well, at the age of 30, 35, now you're worrying, gymming, planning, this one here, that dietitian, whatever else. I don't say don't look after your health, but that mustn't become an obsession. Obsession is deen. Have I done enough for me, for my family? So from that point onwards now, you need to work. See, you think to yourself, Allah has given you so much for what? Just to look after this body. That's all, nothing else. Really, she'll also get tired of your body, you'll get tired of her body. Just working on the body, you'll get tired of her, and she'll get tired of you as well. So work towards something that is lasting, continuous. وَالْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. How beautiful Labak says, if you're looking for something brighter, akhirat is brighter. If you're looking for something that is lasting and eternal, then that is eternal. This is one way or the other is coming to an end. Whether with your cheer or your tear, it's coming to an end. But this thing, وَالْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. So work towards that. So anyway, we're coming back to this story of these three people, right? Now they think how to plan the night. And they say, alright, we'll take turns. First person manages this, the first third, second the second third, and the last one, the last third. We'll manage it like this, so at least what we are doing, we are looking after the treasure. So So the treasure is not lost. And number two is the long night. Tomorrow we have got a heavy day. We have rested also quite sufficiently to be good in our duties for the following day. So both ways we have covered. You see that concern makes everything life. It facilitates everything. When you've got that concern, you've got that fikr, it facilitates everything, makes a plan. Why? You've got that concern, you've got that worry. And you've got no worry, just worried about the short term, worry about your body only, and health tips, that's all. And then what? There must be an aim, there must be a goal. There must be a goal. Like it's a team. And the greater concern of the team is look for the better jerseys, better socks and better boots. What will you say? But it's a waste of time. It's good, you're right, you have a better ball, better jersey, better boots, all that. But the greatest concern is how to score the goal. That goal became a secondary thing, the jersey and the boots, and the ball became the primary thing. Now, what has happened to you? You have lost the goal, you have lost the plight, you have lost the plot. Class, gone. So when you have come to that age now, 35, by it's all now, call it off, just wrap the building, leave everything else aside. Now that future journey of mine, I can't blind myself, I can't be blinded of that. That I have to take cognizance of. I need to recognize that. What preparations, what intizam, what arrangements have I done? If I messed it up, send my children to wrong places, schools, universities, colleges, now I need a damage control plan for that. Because they are exposed to that environment. Right? When they are exposed to the environment, if those evils have crept into their minds, I need to go and correct it. I thought about their rosy, but I didn't think about their permanent life. For their rosy, I went and damaged everything. They had some evil, weird ideas in their minds. Why? They were exposed to wrong environments. Wrong type of studies. Now they can't remove those things out of their mind. Now it's my duty to go and correct them, rectify them. To correct them. Otherwise, if you know, climbing this mountain is an achievement, parachute is an achievement, scuba diving is an achievement, going for holidays to Berg's is an achievement, every now and then flying away from Umrah is an achievement, but there is something much more important. Sit back and try and administer your deen, the deen of your children. What level of tarbiyat have you got in them? What values have you passed on? Like I said, that person becomes valuable with values. And you strip him from being valuable when you strip the values off him. And to get the values into him, you have to sit down, make magajmari. I ask you for that matter. Right? Education is important, like tarbiyat is important. If that ustad that is teaching your child, every now and then is going for umrah, 20 days, 15 days, and he's teaching your child, and there's another ustad, another molana that is teaching, and he's not hardly moving out, 10 years, 20 years, he's not moving out, or he moves out just few days, and he comes back. Who will you prefer to send your children to? Ask yourself. Obviously you say, no, hey, this person. So you understand, you come to a conclusion that to make the child, you have to sacrifice all these things here and make the child. And you don't make the sacrifice, the children are not made. Come what may. The children are not made. And all day you can't do what you were doing. Or the person that is moving, that ustad is moving every now and then, running away here and there. He can't make up my children. I need to look for an istad and a control that will be consistent every day. So that this few years that he's got for his talim and tarbiyat, that he's done and he's covered very well. Now we know it. When it applies to us, we know it. For the same analogy will apply to your business. Same thing. So they say, alright, we'll distribute the night in this way. The first third person takes the first third. I said, what can I do to pass the time? Because I'm going to just remain idle, then sleep may overtake me, and I may just lose the treasure just now. We got $1 billion here. Can't expect it to run away like that. We worked for it, and we strive for it. So we need to see that this thing is preserved properly. So this person said, I must engage myself. If I don't engage myself, sleep will overtake me. See, concern, fikr. Fikr will make you do everything. And befikri will let you lose everything. And fikr will give you everything. And befikri will let you lose everything. So he starts off, he says, what am I? Oh, I am a carpenter. Let me make the shape of a man. Look at, now, we're not talking of tasweer now. Tasweer is a different thing now, right? These people are all jahils, they don't know about the masla. Hypothetical, right? They don't know about the masla. He's shaping the whole thing nicely. Within that 4 hours, that was his time allocated to him, he completed the whole structure. Very beautiful structure. Got the next sati up. By it's your turn. He got up quite relaxed and comfortable that, mashallah, I have a nice sleep. Now it is the turn of my sati to have a good sleep, to enjoy sleep as well. So the next sati is taking a sleep. So this sati thinks to himself, what, I need to do something also to keep myself occupied. Look after this treasure and keep myself occupied. Both I need to do. But how do I manage the both? In iman, you need to do both, isn't it? You look after your iman, but to preserve that iman, you need to do a little of dunya as well. Most of our iman is preserved because we got some dunya. If you got no dunya, your iman will also be lost. So you have to do some dunya just to preserve your iman, not the other way around. Do some dunya to preserve your iman. That we are so comfortable, relaxed, we're doing all our obligations and observances. Why? Because dunya, everything is running well. So we're doing all our obligations well. But the moment the business dips, then everything falls. So we're doing it so that we can preserve that deen of ours, we can preserve that iman of ours. So this person, he says, I am a darzi by trade. I am a tailor by trade. So he made the skeleton, he made the whole body, let me do my share. I will show my talent, he showed his talent. He made a nice beautiful suit, kurta, topi, whatever, achkan, nicely. And as his 4 hours just ended, everything just worked out for him. The kurta, the trouser, the achkan, the topi, everything just finished at the time. He just finished his part. Now he had to go and wake up the third person before he gets to sleep. Everybody asleep for 8 hours, isn't it? He for 8 hours, second person for 8 hours, now the last person to play his part. So when he comes up to the scene, last person, when he comes to the scene, so he says, oh Allah Ta'ala, this person had a profession, he was talented, he had a career. He was a carpenter, this person was a tailor by trade, and I am to behunahu. They were talented people, I am without a talent. They were skilled people, I am unskilled. They were professional people, I am unprofessional. Oh Allah Ta'ala, you are that Khuda, you are that Malik of those people that are helpless. Now they did their share, and they showed that they were loyal to this whole partnership, this whole company. Now that I got nothing to present to show that I am also loyal to this company. He did this. And the second person did his share. Oh Allah Ta'ala, what can I do, Allah Ta'ala? What can I do? To show that I am part of this whole company. To show that I am part of this whole partnership. Allah Ta'ala, nothing is impossible. So he went on crying. And it's the last third of the night. Last third of the night. Where Allah Ta'ala is coming to the Samaya Dunya. And he's pleading, Allah Pak is pleading, you want something, or take it from me. For takes, you know what they say nowadays, they say it, for takes. Kya kehte? Grabs for takes. Kya kehte? I don't know what they say, grabs or whatever. But Allah Pak is saying, it's grabs now, take, king. And then the motai is saying, Allah Pak, just hold on now, let me just have a few more snoozes, then I'll come back. Like it is the government that is knocking at your door. And he's saying, just come and take, bhai, come. I have opened all my treasures, come and take. I said, no, my Hazrat, Allah Pak, I know you got something, but just let me lie down, few more snoozes, I'll come up just now. Malik ka to ek shaan hota hai, there's a splendor, there's a greatness, there's a shokat, grandeur, ek jalal hota hai. You want to take it, you come and take it, bhai. I don't force you. Afa nul zimukumua, will I force it to you? You don't appreciate it, and I must go and force it onto you. I told you the word, get up and take it, enjoy. But you're showing an attitude. You think I'm going to go and force you to accept it. But you're showing an attitude. Antum la kari, you're showing an attitude, and you expect me to force it down to you. So I'm telling you, you got problems in your rosy, come and take. You have problems in your relationship with Allah Ta'ala, come and take from me.
I will see to you. I will see for you. He cried and he cried and he went on crying. Allah, you make it. You make it happen. You make it happen. The only way I can show that I have done my share here is if you give life to this lifeless thing. You the one. يُخْرِجُ الْحَيَّ مِنَ الْمَيِّتِ وَيُخْرِجُ الْمَيِّتَ مِنَ الْحَيِّ. To give life to the lifeless is your job. Nobody else can do it. But Lord, you do it. So at least I am a loyal partner. I'm not an unloyal, disloyal to this whole partnership. Lord, let it happen. And now, just before the break of Fajr, and he's crying away, and there the life creeps into this body, they get up for Fajr, they see another human being there, with the suit, and the shape that this person has given. By kya hua? Ye be-baso ka khuda hai. He is the one that has done it. In this day and time, the problem that we are faced with is, there is nobody that is crying to Allah Ta'ala. The formality is there, the routine is there, but the real cry, and more so ever, at the latter portion of the night, nobody is doing it. It's not my habit to talk about dreams, but we heard of one of Ismail Hussain passed away, right? So there is one nice good alim. He saw him in a dream. He related the dream to me. So I said, let me share it with you because there is some points to learn from here. Not because of its excitement, but because there is something to learn from this dream. So anyway, he met up with this person here. So this person, this alim, is asking him, how do you find the grave? He said, what are you talking of grave here? I am enjoying myself. I am moving around, jannat, flying, whatever I'm doing. Fruit here and enjoy there, that side, this side, whatever else. I'm enjoying around. I'm moving around. So this is an alamat of a shaheed. Tayrin khudrin. Fi jawfi tayrin khudrin, as the hadith says. They are embodied into some type of a flying object. They move and join Jannah, the streams, the people, the woman, the fruit, etc. They are enjoying themselves. I am moving around. So what are you talking about grave? I don't know about grave. What are you talking about grave? See, Allah Pak, give us that iman, khatma bil iman. Then he asked, and how do you find Allah Ta'ala? But it's an even more important thing. How do you find Allah Ta'ala? This alim is asking, and how did you find Allah Ta'ala? So his words were, Allah Pak is very, very soft. In other words, he's very compassionate. He's very loving. He's very caring. Isn't that a message of hope for us? But is it for us then to take a wrong advantage of? Is it for us to not appreciate that Allah Ta'ala is so merciful, He's so loving? He interpreted in His own words that Allah Pak is so soft and caring, loving. He's soft and soft and He's caring and loving. Alright. Then, Mawlana asks, can you give me some advice? Because this person has completed the journey. He needs some fuel for continuing the journey. This man's journey is ended, kalas, ended. But some advice for me that I still need to continue with this journey, something to, for me as well. So he's showing two things. One is halal rozi. See that what we are doing is halal. Even if it's less, but it's halal. More, didn't have much. Debts here and they're doing business, he's got some debts. Only after he's passed away, then he did some bargains and some deals that came with some profits and everything was settled, alhamdulillah. But he didn't leave anything, right? So that means that wealth wasn't a provision for the hereafter. Without that wealth, that provision that he had taken was good for him. See, what we think that provision is, what we leave behind is a good provision. So it's not like that. The taqwa is a good provision. Not to say to waste that wealth, but not to be obsessed with that wealth. So to be obsessed with halal and haram. What I'm doing is halal, is it haram? Juma time now, and at least what can I do to respect and to exalt this favor of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? How much I appreciate. Allah Pak, from all the nations, He has blessed me with Juma namaz. And how can I show favor? How can I show this appreciation? I'll at least close the shop 1.5 hours before the namaz. I'll close up for my staff for 2 hours. And in their hearts will be impressed. You see, this Juma is such an important thing that 2 hours is closed down. No matter what they do afterwards, but in their hearts of hearts they'll feel, okay, Jummah is something very, very great. I think, no, I just look at Rand's instance. I'm going to close up for 1 hour, so much I lost. And if I'm going to open up, so much I made. But Allah Pak, that doesn't work. If it worked, then he would have said there, okay, you know, make more and more. To the last, one makes that last cent. The greater emphasis by Allah Ta'ala, was it halal, was it right? What you're earning. He didn't ask for a security plan, no insurance plan, nothing, absolutely nothing. What he asked for, halal and haram. When anything goes off in your life, then 90% of the time is because you have slipped away in the areas of halal and haram, some way or the other. You have overstepped the mark here, there, you haven't slipped the mark, overstepped the mark, something went off. You didn't worry about it. So now your temper would rise, this thing will happen, that will happen. But where it started off from, it started off where you crossed the borders. Didn't worry about it. So that was the first thing, whether you're in employment, whether it's your own business, but you have to be dead sure that you are doing it halal. In employment, then I've sold this time to you. So this time belongs to you, I can't do anything of my own in your time. Halal. In your time I can't do anything, absolutely. I've sold my time to you. I'm being remunerated because I sold my time to you. Otherwise, why am I getting money? That was the first advice he gave. The second advice he gave, dua. Increased of dua. Obviously that will mean with liberal istighfar, etc. But dua, to increase the dua. More especially now that we are approaching Ramadan, then we need to increase all these things. Our dua, our longing to the akhirat, our longing that we have a clean slate. Everything is absolutely clean, spotless. We've got no blemishes against our name. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in His records, everything is clean. Hukukul la is everything. Everything is in order. Hukukul ibad is also everything in order. Now, Ramadan time, I don't have to wait. Hey, I wronged it with this person. And in hukukul ibad, in four areas. One is physical abuse. One is verbal abuse. One is emotional abuse. Alright, the fourth one is mental abuse. Maybe you don't have to go and settle it, but you have to clear your mind. Mental abuse is, for example, I am harboring malice for you, but you don't know about it. So you don't know about it, I haven't caused any hurt to you. But my heart is filthy, I need to go and cleanse my heart. Right. It's the same breath, financial abuse. In any way we have abused the person financially. So go and sort it out, clear it out. Because remember, these are the checkpoints before your acceptance. You coming to Ramadan, it's like a checkpoint. Allah wants 5 checkpoints. This right. Now all your deeds of Ramadan is flowing through. But when you can't go beyond those checkpoints, how do you want your deeds to ascend? It will only ascend after you have gone through the right, you have gone through right through the checkpoints. Abuse, right, there's no abuse. Physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, there's no abuse. I checked all through. Now, whether you ask your staff, your wife, your children, right? The Islamic approach is, have I done what I'm supposed to be doing? Not, did they do what they were supposed to be doing? But have I done what I'm supposed to be doing? That's the Islamic thinking. The mentality in Islam is, have I done what I'm supposed to be doing? Whether they have done right for me or they have not looked at me rightly and correctly, that is secondary. But have I done what I was supposed to be doing? Have I done? Am I clear? When I come to the immigration or to the customs, I can't say, see this person, what he's done, and see what he's done to me. They'll ask you, what, are you right as well? Are you correct as well? So you look whether you are correct, you are in a passable condition, or you are in a condition that you can't pass through. So the rights of people, go and get that all right. Slightest, small hurt you have caused to someone or the other, sometimes from the time that you know yourself to this point here, and clear all that out. Clear that out. And you'll find, inshallah you'll find, I'm sitting in the house of Allah Ta'ala, but I'll guarantee you, that you'll find a goodness in your heart. Everything has been cleared. With Allah Ta'ala and with people, now you'll find, automatically you will find a happiness, a tranquility, a form of calmness in your heart. That I've cleared everything now. Nobody, I'm sure, I've checked this through very well. Alhamdulillah, I'll be ascending. So the amount that you made is nothing. What means by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the quality. Have you got the quality? That there's no abuse, there's no hurt, there's no cause of any injury and pain to anybody. In financially, emotionally, in any way, no pain, whatever. Now you are winning, you are going right through. Allah ta'ala tawfiq nasib.